Welcome to the podcast from Eden Worship Center. Because we believe that it is God's Word that does God's work in God's people, we want you to hear the gospel preached in the gathering of believers. We want you to read it for yourself and to join us as we think together and talk together about the sermon from this past week and what's going on in our world. You can join the conversation by sending in your comments and questions to edenwc@hotmail.com. May God cause His Word to come alive in your heart today. All right, welcome everybody to the EWC Midweek Podcast. Pastor Matt here in the office studio. We normally record this in our conference room, but it's a little chilly in there this morning, and we have some special guests with us on the podcast. So we're excited to have Destin and Jen Detweiler, members of Eden Worship Center, who are serving with To Every Tribe. Destin and Jen, welcome. Glad you guys are here.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good to be here.
You may hear it in Destin's voice. He is feeling deathly ill and yet has chosen to come in and do this for the sake of your soul, good listener. So be encouraged. Destin and Jen, number one, good to have you here. It's always great when we get to see you guys, but also excited to hear a little bit more update than you were able to share in the 45 minutes on Sunday. If you missed it, Destin and Jen shared a little bit of a missions update on Sunday during the Sunday school hour. And I said something about, we're going to turn it over to you guys. And we got about 45 minutes and walked back to the seat. And I think Destin, it was your father-in-law, Mike Drake, although I'm a little fuzzy on remembering, who's like, you seriously think Destin's going to keep this to 45 minutes? I'm like, I got no hopes. Not holding my breath.
Usually I do pretty good, but I got on a couple of rabbit trails like right off the bat.
Even so, you guys wrapped it up like exactly right on time.
Yeah.
Man.
We went 3 minutes past.
Yeah.
Professionals. Professionals. That's what we got here.
Yeah.
So good to hear those kind of missions updates. Mm-hmm. But a lot of times those are just like mission work logistics. Mm-hmm. We went here. We were at, you know, this village. We were with these people. We did this thing. And it really doesn't scratch down beneath that surface into the lived experience. Yes, but what's it like? What's it like to do that? You know, for the people who love you or praying for you, who support you. And that's kind of what I want us to do in, I know you're not feeling good, Destin, but in the next 4.5 hours, we're going to be together for this podcast.
You got this. Yeah.
No problem. No problem.
I might die.
But people get to hear, you know, prayers for healing and resurrection. It's going to be good. Yeah. The people will be encouraged. So you're serving with To Every Tribe in Northern Ontario. Mm-hmm. How long have you guys been in Northern Ontario?
4 years. Yep. In November. It'll be 4 years.
Yeah.
Or it was 4 years. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think we got there November 9th of 2019.
Yep.
Okay. So just trying to think of like developing this idea a little bit. To Every Tribe has really focused on reaching unreached people groups. Mm-hmm. Why are you in Canada? Mm-hmm. Like what's the mission setup that has brought you to Canada? Because most of us don't hear Canada and go, remote, unreached people group. Mm-hmm. And yet that's not only the reality, it may be one step worse than that. Mm-hmm. Unreached people groups, you're going in with a brand new message, but you guys are going in where the message has been really broken. So give us, maybe for those who don't know, just a brief synopsis. Why Canada?
Yeah, so I guess Canada, especially with First Nation people, which would traditionally have been called Indians, but the PC term, I guess, is First Nation, which is funny because they're totally fine with Indian. They're like, why do people keep changing our names?
But
Or native.
Or natives. Mm-hmm. But so we would, the way we would talk about them in particular would be like misreached or underreached. And so because of the history of a lot of, like, I guess a term that gets thrown around a lot these days is colonization. Mm-hmm. Because of because of that, there was a lot of resistance to the gospel. And so what we find in the areas that we work, there are maybe the older generation, the people that are in their maybe 60s to 80s, would a lot of them would identify as Christian. But people that are younger than that, the majority of them wouldn't, especially the young people. There's definitely a push towards reconnecting with traditional Native worship, something like animism,
right?
A lot of
right.
And so they would.
So what is somebody just listening and they hear animism, they go, "I'm not familiar with that term. What's animism?"
Animism would have. I mean, there's. It depends on the different tribes. You can have anything from ancestor worship to making offerings to nature or spirits. Mm-hmm. You're always trying to gain the favor, I guess, of the mm-hmm. spirits. Mm-hmm. And so you're like up there, it would have been traditional to like make a tobacco offering. If you're fishing, if you're ice fishing, you drill a hole, you throw a little tobacco in there.
Really?
Yeah, you're making an offering to the spirit, the river spirit, or they don't actually, like a lot of them don't know anymore why they do some of those things. They right. just know, like, this is what you do.
Yeah.
But behind it is generally you're asking spirits or the spirit world to give you fish, and you're giving something in return.
Yeah.
And so.
Or it might be smudging. To ward off evil spirits or something yeah. like that.
So what would smudging be?
It'd be burning like sweetgrass, I think, is usually what mm-hmm. it is, in like a shell.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then just kind of wafting it around the room to kind of ward off any evil spirits that might be in there, or
putting it over yourself.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
to cleanse yourself if anyone tried to put a curse on you or yeah. they tried, or if. Even if you did something wrong, it's a way to kind of atone, I guess, you know, mm-hmm. to cleanse yourself
yeah.
from the wrong that you've done or the evil that somebody, maybe they put that on you.
Yeah. So that, and that's the natural sort of state of the Native people who are up there, the First Nations people. Mm-hmm. And, you describe them as being misreached. Talk about that a little bit. What does misreached mean? Not just unreached, like they haven't heard the gospel, they haven't heard of Jesus, but they've been misreached. What does that mean?
Well, so, yeah, they, so for like about 150 years, it was the policy of the Canadian government to take the Indian out of the child, to remove, to forcibly assimilate or to make the Native people become more white, to adopt their way of life, their way of dress, their way of speaking.
Sure.
And so the schools were run, they were funded by the government, but they were run by the churches, specifically the Anglican and Catholic churches, probably the most, and then the United Church, and even later on the Mennonites. There's a lot, and there's still a lot of Mennonites up there.
Yeah.
And so those schools went on for like 150 years, and the last ones closed in like 1996. And in those schools, they were disciplined if they spoke their language. They made the young boys cut their hair. They would traditionally have long hair, which in their culture, if you cut your hair, if you're a boy, the only time you would cut your hair is if you were grieving. Mm. And so here, they take all these little boys from their communities when they're as young as 5 years old, and they put them on a plane and they ship them down to the school. And as soon as they get there, they cut all these boys' hair off.
Yeah.
Now the boys, all they can think is like, did like maybe my mom died or maybe my dad died. And so, but the people running the school don't know that's how they
mm-hmm.
perceive that being done to them, but that they have a different, completely different worldview.
Yeah.
And so now they think like, I've been taken from my family and probably maybe one of them died.
Right.
And so, and now.
Well, and so think animistic culture, animistic mm-hmm. worship, mm-hmm. where this is attached to grieving and mm-hmm. death.
Mm-hmm.
You've just forcibly, because it you talked about it on Sunday. This isn't like a for the elites. You can go to this special school. Like they're going into mm-hmm. these remote villages, forcibly taking the mm-hmm. children away, putting them in these schools, and then instantly attaching some idea of death to it. Mm-hmm. You know, death mm-hmm. and grieving, and you know, it. Have I done something? This whole spirit thing, mm-hmm. spirit appeasement. Have I done something that has turned all of that against me? And you know, mm-hmm. like it's an instant setup for failure. Mm-hmm. And the tragedy is, it was attached with the name of Jesus Christ,
yeah. right,
and the church.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of sexual abuse that went on by the staff of these schools. There was, like I mentioned before, like the discipline if they spoke their language or tried to do any of their customs. And then they were also forced to, you know, dress a different way and all those sorts of things. So, and they couldn't retain their language. So, mm-hmm. I mean, we know, like we've heard stories of a lot of people, like some of the people that are doing better in some of the communities, it's because whenever the plane would come to mm-hmm. get the kids, the parents would take their family like way out in the bush.
Right.
For maybe like a week or two or whatever, so that they just weren't there when they came to get them. And so some of the kids never went through it because they would just go hide.
Able to get away from
it. Yeah, they just hide out in the bush and they do that every year until.
But usually those people are directly connected to people that have gone through it.
Yeah, so it's never. Still impacts.
You're never not affected by it.
Yeah.
So.
And so, yeah, because of all the stuff that went on in those residential schools, it definitely made the gospel or in the name of Jesus like something that is like
shameful.
Yeah, just something forced. It was forced on them, and so they. I don't know about you, but for me, like if somebody tries to force me to do something, I'm not.
Yeah,
that's not going to go very well.
Yeah. But, well, especially if they come in and they don't look like you.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll talk about difficulties in a little bit, but one of the difficulties is the people who did that look like you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so, you know, they're coming from this culture, this native culture, and then you guys are coming in and there's this instant mm-hmm. attachment to that.
Mm-hmm.
But you guys didn't go straight from being members of Eden Worship Center to Northern Ontario.
No.
So, Jen, what was the process in between there? What did you guys do?
So, yeah, I mean, when we had decided that missions is what we wanted to do after our kids had moved out of the house, because we have three older children, we ended up selling everything and moving down to Texas.
It's the closest way to get to Canada.
Yeah, so go south.
Southern Texas.
Yeah. So we ended up moving down on the border of actually Texas and Mexico and did 2 years of training down in Texas. So, and our training, even though some of it we thought was really difficult and challenging, was, you know, 3 weeks in the classroom and then 1 week in Mexico. So it, you know, we were kind of applying what we were learning in the classroom kind of immediately. Yeah. With the training that we
went through. So what was the 1 week in Mexico about, maybe for people who don't know? So you had 3 weeks mm-hmm. of classroom instruction, what people would think of in mm-hmm. going to school, and then 1 week in Mexico.
Yeah.
What was the week in Mexico?
A lot of times it was like just really studying the culture that we were in, just learning what the people did and just how to effectively be able to share the gospel with them. You know, we wanted to have like spiritual conversations and we wanted to build trust and build relationship. And so those were some of the main things that we worked on. We learned a lot of, just even how to, sleep in hard places.
Mm-hmm. So it wasn't like 4-star hotels?
No, far from that.
No, there was, how many was on our team? Six?
There was six.
Sometimes there'd be a couple with us, but we shared a little 2-bedroom house.
Mm-hmm.
Although we never really slept in any of those rooms. We slept in like the porch area.
It wasn't really safe to sleep in those rooms.
We ended up sleeping in on a cot with a bug tent on top of it. Mm-hmm. And when we first went in, they said, you definitely want a bug tent. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, ah, it's not going to be that bad. And so we get there first night. I'm like, oh, I've made a huge mistake.
Mistakes were made.
And yeah. And
so it, there's no windows. Yeah, there's bars where the windows are supposed to go, but there's no screens and no glass.
Right.
So, and some of the doors didn't quite shut all the way. So we'd have to put like coolers or tables and in front of the doors so that we wouldn't have chickens and pigs and dogs in our house at night.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes they'd still get in.
And sometimes, sometimes our teammate, he woke up the one day with a big, nasty dog laying next to him. So
well, chicken, pigs, and dogs weren't the only obstacles, like the cartels in that area.
So the first night, I didn't bring my bug tent, and one of my teammates had a regular tent, and it was probably like 110 degrees in the house, and it was only 100 outside. So it's like, well, let's sleep outside. Except the tent was really only like a screen. We didn't put the rain fly on, so it was just a screen, and now we're outside. And we ended up in the backyard, which is all dirt. There's no grass anywhere.
Right.
And you'd periodically wake up to dogs looking at you in the face or like chickens running around your tent. And there's people driving around. The village is literally in the middle of all these fields. It looks like the Great Plains. You can see for 5 to 10 miles in every direction. Hmm. And the whole village is like maybe 5 blocks by 5 blocks. And there'd be people driving around with their bass playing, and they had ground effects, and we're like, oh, that's the cartel. And so we're in our tent, and like there's all these animals running around, and then you think the cartel's like going to kill you in your sleep. Because it's a new place, new experience. You don't really know what's good, what's bad, or what sounds are dangerous, what sounds are...
Sure.
Like one of the things we learned down there, we were out with the mayor one day, touring a bunch of different places, and we were having a great time with him. And we heard a gunshot, and I didn't think anything of it. I mean, heck, sometimes on the weekends out where we lived, it sounded like World War III.
Yeah. Right, hunters out there doing their thing.
And... No, people firing automatic weapons and blowing stuff up.
Or just like target practicing or whatever, you know.
Sorry, guys. So gunshots for me were a normal thing that I'd hear every day. But down there, it means somebody's shooting at somebody else.
Yeah.
Because they took all the weapons from the farmers.
Oh, wow.
So nobody had guns. The only guys that have guns are bad guys. And so if you hear a gunshot, it's serious and it means danger.
And you go back to your house.
And so we went back to the house.
Really bad. Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, that's what I was thinking. Like around here, there's occasional times where it sounds like World War III is going on somewhere in the relatively close distance, but it's because it's opening day of whatever. And, there are people just hunting and down there, like it's totally different.
Yeah.
Yeah. They don't even have guns to hunt anymore. So,
wow.
So yeah, you're just the first week you're there, you're just trying to get to understand,
And the whole point of being there, which it is great. We were talking about this a little before we started the podcast. To every tribe can't prepare you for every scenario, every situation you're going to have to walk into. Mm-hmm. But the idea was we're going to spend at least a quarter of the time teaching you to try and read the culture, read the people, read the room that you're in. Mm-hmm. How do I build relationships with them? How do I have conversations so I can get to the place where we're having spiritual conversations so that you can get to the place where you're having gospel conversations? Mm-hmm. Like that's the whole point of going to Mexico in there.
Yeah. And we did a lot of door to door ministry. But it wasn't like door to door, like you don't know people. We knew people and we would go over to their house.
Sure.
And
yeah.
Have some cookies and Mexican Coke with them or whatever. And we would have people over to our house for dinner.
Mexican Coca-Cola.
Yeah. Yeah, Mexican Coca-Cola.
We're talking about the cartel here.
Yeah. And then it's like, like any part of training or going to a new country is all about getting used to being in a new place.
Yeah.
And so even things in Canada now that we used to do that were that would make you anxious or scary or that you would maybe struggle with at first. Now it's just like, I mean, it's just what you do.
Yeah.
It's just part of your life now.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, and that's part of what the training in Mexico is to help with it. And that you're just getting, I always tell anyone, if anything, Mexico made it so like I can sleep anywhere or live anywhere. Cause it's like, well, if I can sleep in a tent in the backyard of little Mexican village or sleep in a house with like huge cockroaches flying in while you're eating dinner. And then
you just learn to flick them off your food.
Yeah.
It's fine.
I remember a teammate, we were sitting there eating and all these bugs had flown in, these hornets had flown in, and one flies down and like stings him in the neck while we're eating. I mean, it was terrible for him, but we were all cracking
but
up.
But we loved it.
It was great.
But,
true camaraderie. Yeah.
But it's like, I always liken going into Mexico too, in class, there, you know, like you're forging a sword and you put it in the fire and then you pull it out and bang on it to shape it. And going into Mexico is like putting it in the fire, right? And then you pull it back up and you pound it into shape. And that was like those 3 weeks of class, you're trying to pound it into shape and then you put it back in the fire.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's that forging process where you're kind of being, you're not just learning a bunch of information, but you're being tested, you know, you're being... Sure. You're being put to the test.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So
what made you guys want to do that? Like, what led to you guys signing up to be missionaries?
Well, I would say a big thing was the place that I worked for 18 and a half years was named Mission Woodworking, and it was started by a couple that wanted to be involved in missions. They had went to a thing called Perspectives on World Mission.
Okay.
And they run those around here periodically. If you ever see one or you ever hear of one, I would recommend that you go. I haven't went myself, but I've heard a lot of good things. And generally what they do is they'll bring in 8, 10, 12 different missionaries, and they share on a specific topic, but they're also sharing some of their experiences. And what it's meant to do is give people a perspective mm-hmm. on world mission, mm-hmm. or perspective of what God's doing globally.
Yeah.
So they had went to one of those and they felt through that called to be involved in mission somehow. But both of them realized like, we're probably not going to be missionaries, but we could support missionaries. And so through that, they felt that the Lord laid on their heart that they should start a business to support missionaries. And so,
and how long did you work there?
18 and a half years.
Yeah.
And so I worked with them for a long time, and we supported a lot of missionaries that would come in and share with us the work that they were doing in different places, and the work that and what God was doing in different places. And we would get the chance as employees to give them like, here's a check for thousands of dollars. And and that the church that we were going to at the time had sent a church planning team to Senegal, West Africa. And so that was going on in our church. And so we got to hear kind of that whole process for them forming that team and going over there, and then people from our church going over there to visit them and them coming to share with us. And periodically, when different missionaries came off the field, they would need, you know, they were just trying to get kind of reacclimated to being in the States, and they got to find a place to live and they need a job. And so a lot of times they'd end up coming to work at mission for a while because it was a good work environment. You know, you're kind of working in a Christian bubble, mm-hmm. In that most of the people, especially early on, we all went to church together. We all worked together. And a lot of the missionaries were missionaries that came through our church. Yeah. And so,
isn't that awesome? I'm just thinking like from the perspective of people listening to that, who maybe are saying in their hearts, like, yeah, I don't think I'm ever going to be a missionary. Mm-hmm. Like this, maybe this doesn't apply to me because mm-hmm. I mean, I'm interested in your story, but it's never going to be my story. Mm-hmm. Only the very first thing that you point to in that missions experience is a work environment where people weren't missionaries, but they had such a heart for it mm-hmm. that it literally shaped the direction of your life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, that's a great encouragement to us as local missionaries, mm-hmm. which we're all called to be. Live your life, live your family, live your business in such a way where you are directed towards the gospel and the kingdom of God. And mm-hmm. like, that's just encouraging. I think that's great.
Yeah.
We also tried to have, whenever missionaries would come to visit, we usually tried to have them stay in our home too. It was just a great opportunity for even our kids to, you know, hear what's going on in their lives and what mission life looked like.
Yeah.
And so that was something we always looked forward to.
Yeah.
Well, and a couple of those guys were people that kind of poured into me too, mm-hmm. and that I looked up to. And there's kind of that saying, you know, birds of a feather flock together. And, you know, we were doing life with people that were involved in missions. So mm-hmm. it kind of rubs off on you.
Yeah.
And I always tell people too that your life is a story, and it's telling, your life is telling something about God's story. You know, it's telling something about the glory of God. And so we always thought it'd be a great story that having work there, then becoming a missionary that they support,
right?
That would be a great story, you know, like, and it would glorify God. And mm-hmm. and so that was something that we, I guess, aspired to and tried to grow into it. I mean, it took 18 and a half years, but but it was something that was always kind of out there.
Yeah. Which, as long as I've known you, that it's been something at the forefront that you mm-hmm. guys have talked about. Like, yep, we want to do this someday. Mm-hmm. We want to do this. And then the day comes that you do it. You know, like, we actually have to sell our house. We actually have to move away. What was the hardest part for you guys in doing that? Like, what was the most difficult thing in making that leap from that which we want to do someday to that which we're doing?
Probably the fear of the unknown, kind of jumping into something that you don't know.
Sure.
I mean, obviously, like, for, it's just very difficult being away from our kids, our families, our grandkids. Like, those are the things that are by far the hardest for me personally. Well,
and the grandkids have all come in that window
of time. Yeah, for sure. So, yep, it's learning how to be a grandma when you're hundreds and hundreds of miles away, you know, what that looks like. So, yeah, we've tried really hard to keep a close relationship with our babies.
Yeah, I would say being away from family is definitely hard, especially when if there's anything happening at all that you can't be there for, that's definitely difficult. And I think another thing initially is just making the transition when we did in our life. we went to the field, like, I think we'd only been at Tevere Tribe a couple months when I turned 40 years old.
Oh, okay.
And so that's not the typical mission path. A lot of times you find people that are in their, like, early to late 20s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They're either just starting out in life or they finished college, got married and had a couple kids, and now this is what they're going to do.
Yeah.
And so now for us making that transition as 40-year-olds, and we had never not had children. Mm-hmm. Like, we had Seth was born a few weeks before he got married, and then we never had this time as a couple to be together without children. Yeah. And so we were doing that for the first time at 40 years old, and now far away from the place that we had lived in our whole life. I mean, we always lived in Elkhart County,
mm-hmm. yeah,
and my whole family had since for like five generations. And so, but it was actually really good, like, going down there. I mean, it was a great, being down there for 2 years, it was kind of like, I guess maybe for us, like, being in college or something, because we didn't have that experience. Mm-hmm. But now we're having that at 40. And so making that transition from changing careers, I would say, it was a, for me, that was difficult, because, and I shared this a while back, in October, one of the last things that I did before we went on home assignment was we had this big roundtable discussion with another ministry to see if we could work together and how maybe we're doing some things they could learn from and they're doing some things we could learn from, or ways that we could work together. And mm-hmm. One of the questions was something like what's working for you, what's not working. And I was explaining the difficulty of being in the profession I was before. I did every job in that whole place because I had worked there for so long, and I became the plant manager, and it was like I knew how to do everything. Like I could do it in my sleep. And and I was telling these guys this at the table, that there wasn't a lot of days that we didn't accomplish what we set out to do.
Yeah.
Like if we knew what we needed to do, like we could get it done. Yep. Like I could get it done. And I would make sure that it got done, even if I had to stay longer, other people had to stay longer or whatever. And now to transition from that into missions where, like, sometimes it doesn't matter how hard you work at something.
Yeah.
Like you can't accomplish it.
Yeah.
And so that has been difficult. Cause you know, in a factory life, if you give it your best, you can do it.
Yeah.
But like in missions, you're totally dependent on God has to work, you know,
yeah.
And if he doesn't,
yeah,
you're just spinning your wheels.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And it's not some woodworking project that's sitting in front of you. It's people,
mm-hmm.
It's lives, it's families.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so, so difficult,
mm-hmm.
Which I think that kind of leads to a good question. Like, what were some of those things that you anticipated about what that life and ministry and missions was going to look like?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe what were some of the things that you anticipated? You're like, I can't believe we even thought that.
Mm-hmm.
And what were some of the things like maybe you were right or you were surprised by?
Mm-hmm. You go first.
Yeah, you go first.
I've been talking a bunch.
So. Oh, man. I mean, one of the things that really kind of threw a wrench in it was COVID,
because
we got there 3 months before COVID, global pandemic hit. So yeah, we didn't plan for that one for sure.
You have this idea. I'm going to go and connect with people, build these relationships, share the gospel. It's going to be tough. And then you get there and you can't talk to people.
Yeah, we literally can't go out of our house, or we can't literally have people over to our house, or we could get arrested or be fined, or it really made things really tricky and difficult.
Yeah.
So another thing is we just had spent 2 years down in Texas with a very warm culture, you know, environment, like as in hot Texas, but as in also like a warm, hospitable people. And so then we're going up to Canada, and it matches the environment there, you know, I mean, like it's a colder culture, like the people aren't as inviting, you know, so like we're having to be a lot more intentional about reaching out to other people. But then with COVID, then it makes it a whole lot difficult then too, you know. It's just like we really struggled to, you know, make connections or like even have friendships right at first, just because of, you know, we were so thankful for our team that was there in Canada with us. I mean, I think, like, I don't even know if we would have stayed on the field for for this long.
Sure. Well, we were all in like a fourplex or a quadplex.
Yeah.
And so like we could like sneak over to each other's houses during COVID, because like we don't have to take our car.
We're all in the same building.
Right. And you're all in the same building, and it's like you just need to spend time with somebody,
mm-hmm.
and you can just have them like wait till dark and they can walk over in defense of, I think, of Sioux Lookout culture, I think going there, we didn't realize the dynamic, but once you understand it, it makes sense a little. And that is mm-hmm. that they, so how Canada works, and it's basically how we ended up in a place like Sioux Lookout is if you want to move there as a refugee or an immigrant, you have to prove that you're not taking a job from a Canadian. Mm. And so oftentimes you have to work in a place like Sioux Lookout because it's remote. It's in the far north. It's cold. And Canadians don't want those jobs. So yeah. So kind of how it works, whether it be for teachers, they have a program called Teach for Canada, pilots, nurses, whoever it is, they end up doing their first like tour of duty, so to speak, in a place like Sioux Lookout. Mm-hmm. And so most of our nurses they're on a 3-month contract in there.
Wow.
So every 3 months they're rolling over mm-hmm. a ton of nurses. Our pilots, when they get a certain amount of hours in, they're off to another place.
They might only be there for a month, or not a month, but a summer.
Yeah. Then they get enough hours and they go to where they can have a better opportunity mm-hmm. and make more money. Yeah. And so the little towns like Sioux, they're all over Canada. They end up getting kind of used that way.
Sure.
By the Canadian citizens, and then the immigrants coming in, it's their first place they've ever worked, and then they mm-hmm. and so they'll work at like Tim Hortons or mm-hmm. the grocery store or whatever.
Don't say Tim Hortons. Yeah. We don't have those around here.
I yeah know.
Just makes me sad.
They'll end up
there's the one best, in Fort Wayne
the best coffee
it yeah. is
large double double
yeah if you're ever there double double
yeah
yeah
you're welcome
mm-hmm. We still look for them down here if we can find them, like we prefer it to anything else. But and so what happens to the church and the community, but we see it in the church because that's where we spend more time, is that people get fatigued by
sure
mm-hmm. constant turnover of people and mm-hmm. seeing new faces and trying to build relationships and then having to say goodbye.
Yeah.
And so they're a little bit more standoffish because they're trying to protect themselves from being, you know, maybe hurt again from learning to care about somebody or invite them into their home. And now because they're just going to leave.
Yeah.
They're just going to leave. And so, so that's what makes it a little bit, I think, more standoffish. Mm-hmm. And I've definitely tried to challenge them on that, but it's hard to push through that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. When some of the people that's been my experience for 4 years, that's been their experience for 60 years, you know? And it's like, they just kind of get, mm-hmm. you just kind of get numb to it.
Yeah. And that's you brought up a really good thing that is it's a difficult dynamic that you're just kind of stuck with mm-hmm. up there. Mm-hmm. This sort of temporary type of culture where you're here and, I don't even know if I want to bother learning your name because mm-hmm. I'm going to get to know you. I'm going to care about you. And then you're going to be gone.
Yeah.
Mixed with the whole cultural thing where people who look like us have gone into their culture and done lots of damage. So not only is it temporary, but I'm not even sure I can trust you. And then a third dynamic, which I think has been a really difficult one you guys have had to work through, is the mm-hmm. whole thing of the hopelessness, mm-hmm. the suicide rates mm-hmm. in mm-hmm. those areas mm-hmm. are astronomical compared to what we know around
yeah.
here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, it's something that, like, depending on the more people you know, the more often that kind of stuff happens. But it's not uncommon to deal with something like that on a weekly basis, you know, going on somewhere.
Wow.
Daily.
And another piece about Sioux, and it, I think because people live here, it gives them a little bit of insight into it, is that here you kind of have the English and Amish cultures kind of side by side.
Sure.
And there's some overlap, but there's also a line of distinction, you know, mm-hmm. where they have gatherings and they have their whole culture, and sometimes we get invited into that, like go to an Amish wedding or something, right?
Yeah.
But and it's the same thing in Sioux, where you have kind of like, there's actually three, I would say, cultures in Sioux, and that is you have your the white long time mm-hmm. Canadian residents of Sioux, you have your First Nation community, and then you have this like kind of like immigrant or migrant mm-hmm. kind of people that are just temporary mm-hmm. culture. And those three things are, they're kind of their own separate thing, and they intersect, yeah. but they don't always mingle together real well.
There's also really clear lines of distinction.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yeah, back to the suicide and the darkness and all that kind of stuff. There's a term that gets thrown around there, up there a lot, and that is compassion fatigue. Mm, yeah. Isn't that the term?
Yep.
Yeah. And just that, and we see it in, you see it in everyone. I mean, you see it in people that are doing ministry. We see it in the police.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. We see it in the
nurses.
The nursing and hospital staff, where mm-hmm. you've just seen so much death and so much attempted suicide and fighting and drug abuse and alcoholism mm-hmm. and all that kind of stuff. You can easily become jaded.
Yeah.
To it.
Well, you guys mentioned something on Sunday mm-hmm. and I thought this is so far outside of the box of what most of the people sitting in that room had mm-hmm. ever experienced, mm-hmm. Myself included. Mm-hmm. And I feel like I end up in the mess a lot, but you mentioned having a neighbor who has been dealing with suicidal ideations and also suicidal attempts mm-hmm. every weekend for 8 weeks straight. Mm-hmm. And my thought was, I'll bet no one else in this room has had that experience.
Yeah.
And Jen, you said it as if it's just like, well, yeah, I mean, that's what it was like. It was tough. It was rough.
Yeah.
It is rough. You know, it's a current ongoing thing. But,
yeah.
you know, I'm sure you guys have felt some of that compassion exhaust. It's not just fatigue. It's exhaustion.
Yeah, you're exhausted. Yeah. To where you have a little bit of anxiety every time you have a message on your phone.
Yeah.
You know, you're like, oh, no, what happened?
Oh, man,
you
here
know?
We go.
So, yeah. And then, like, we have it, you know, maybe every weekend. But, like, we have friends up in different communities that deal with it every day
yeah.
and every night, multiple times a night, you know? And I mean, yeah. I mean, it can cause serious health problems too, you know, that like yeah. our friend just had a stroke from yeah. dealing with a lot of stress and
yeah. The doctor said it was from stress.
Yeah.
You know, just
so it's
the
just,
stress of prime ministry.
You feel it. You definitely feel it.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of darkness mm-hmm. in that area, and it's an immersive darkness. Mm-hmm. Like it's all around. Mm-hmm. So it's probably also good to remind ourselves that there's been some good times in ministry. Mm-hmm. What have been some good things that have happened that have kind of surprised you mm-hmm. where you're like, man, I didn't really anticipate God using that situation like that or,
yeah.
you know, something like that.
I would say probably during COVID. So like I'm an introverted person. I love being by myself. I'd probably thrive in that. So like, I feel like God made me for this, but I mean, I need people too. So, when we, when COVID was going on, you know, it kind of threw a wrench in like all of our plans, as far as our hope was to really work with a lot of the high school kids that were coming down from all of the communities to go to our town to go to high school.
Sure.
That didn't happen because all of the schools were shut down. So we ended up being able to build relationship with their grandparents and their parents. And that time was a really sweet time of building new friendships and meeting new brothers and sisters in the Lord, our native brothers and sisters in the Lord that we had never met before or knew about, but just got to know in a deeper way. We got to go with one couple to build a shed for them on their traditional campground area and our trap line. And it was,
But she said campground. It's not like a
camp. Yeah, I'm sorry. That's not.
It's, yeah. You have to fly there by plane and there's no other.
Yeah,
cabins
you get dropped
there.
Off, and you're like miles and miles
yeah,
from any.
We flew an hour and a half with a load of lumber in a float plane, and then we had to unload the lumber.
I guess not your traditional on a dock
and throw it in a boat and drive it over and unload it and carry it over to where we were building this thing.
Right. On this piece of ground on which we were camping.
Yes.
That we were sleeping sleeping in a tent. Yeah.
With all of God's creation.
As opposed to
and creatures.
The thing I can't wrap my head around it. The whole idea of camping is generally we're gonna get away. Mm-hmm. We're gonna, you know, just sort of alone in nature. And then they go to these campgrounds where the neighbor is 8 feet from you, and it's the least alone you're going to be for an entire year.
For sure.
I don't get it. Yeah. That one makes sense to me.
Yeah.
But not
I mean, local one here. There is no, there's an outhouse and you drank water out of the lake. And you took a bath in the lake, you took a bath.
Yeah.
But we got to do that in 2020 because there wasn't a lot we could do, and we could fly in there because it was just like, well, get a COVID test, and it's like, well, we don't have it, so and then we're just hanging out for a week out in the bush. And
but then we also did a lot of fishing and taking people fish, so like that's a big, like their culture is big into gift giving, and so we would take a lot of our native elders or just friends into Lookout, like we would just take them fish, banana bread or whatever, just to be able to have a connection point with them.
Yeah.
And that was a huge relationship building activity that we did.
And still do.
And still do.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's something that we enjoy doing. So it was just cool that it was something that God used to to build relationship.
Although it's not, as much as that sounds fun, it does get kind of like, oh, I'm cleaning fish for somebody else again tonight. Like,
it can be work.
I want to just go.
Yes.
I just want to go sit in the house and watch a baseball game or something.
Yeah.
Should have thrown all those fish back. But
yeah.
We're a catch and release boat.
Yeah. Yes. Like,
we deliver whole fish.
That's it. Yes.
And then they're like, I don't know how to do it. And I'm like, what? I'll show you. But
yeah.
That one's a great one, though, because, I mean, anybody who knew you guys before you left knew that if you want to magically catch a fish, go out with Dustin.
Mm-hmm.
Now that you guys live in Canada, they say that about Seth.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
There's just something genetically built in and interesting that God would use that, you know, that just natural things that would be that connection point for building relationships. Because you get those, especially those guys, and periodically, if somebody follows you on your Facebook page, you'll see it. Young guys, get them out in a boat. Well, for the next couple hours, like, you have a captive audience for building relationship and you know, working towards having spiritual conversations. So that's just awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, that was, none of that was by accident either. I had, my uncle owned a fishing resort, and we went there all the time as a kid. That's named Ojibwe.
Oh, Resort. No kidding.
And they're right outside the Leech Lake Band of
Folks. And Ojibwe is what to you guys?
So Ojibwe, so the two groups of First Nation people we work with are Ojibwe and Oji-Cree. And so, I mean, I grew up going to a town that was a reservation, that still is a reservation for the Ojibwe in northern Minnesota. And so that's how I learned how to fish, and I guess I've been around Native people for, you know, a lot of my life, I guess. But I mean, that was pretty indirectly. I mean, it would just be run into people at the bait shop and the grocery store and whatnot.
But it wasn't anything where you're like, well, I want to be a missionary, so I'm going to go to my family's you know, fishing camp.
It was actually one of those things, like when we were considering doing this, I'm like, I'm not going to go to do ministry with Native Americans, because it's like, that just seems like not enough of a stretch.
Yeah,
you know, to, like when you think, like, I'm gonna
things we like to do.
Yeah, I'm gonna go be a missionary. It's gonna be the other side of the world, and it's gonna be all these unknowns and everything. And it's like, well, I know how to do a lot of this stuff, like, so.
But which then it, I think, is a lot of the unknown.
But I think when you get into it, then you realize, like, well, it's good that I have some of those things, because all this other stuff is really hard.
Yeah.
You know? And so some surprising things for me that have been good is I have a really good friend now. that actually it's been really hard for me to make friends in the culture, just because of the past and the history. But Jen has a lot more. Mm-hmm. Guys are just way more standoffish. But I think it was a couple winters ago. I can't remember if it was last winter or the winter before.
It was 2 years ago.
I came back from being down here visiting family, and it had snowed a ton.
Oh, right.
And I had my snowmobile trailer out there, and it had got plowed in, and it was I think that winter we got 12 feet of snow. And by the time we got home, there was already like 3 or 4 feet of snow. And so everything we owned was buried, and I'm out there just like frustratingly shoveling this. And that's by now it's like packed and frozen.
Right. Well, cause it's not like getting a couple feet of snow here, which we do. Mm-hmm. And then it'll be 34 degrees one day and most of it melts and, mm-hmm. you know, melt, thaw, you know, all that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. No.
It stays.
You get to keep it.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's the gift that keeps
yeah,
on.
Yeah. It yes. starts snowing in November and the snow doesn't finally melt until like the middle of May.
You're right.
So you're dealing with at least 6 or 7 months of snow.
Yeah.
And so I was just shoveling in, and a native guy was walking down the street. I think a guy that Jen had talked to several times when she'd be working in the garden, but he sees me and he's like, hey, you need a hand? And I'm like, yeah, sure. He's like, yeah, an extra shovel. And I'm like, yeah. And so
right on.
I'm like, this is really strange. I mean, to offer to, and so he helped me shovel a bunch, and then I invited him in for tea. He didn't take me up on the offer, but so that it took a while even after that for him to come to the place where it's like, hey, come in and have some tea. But that relationship's been different because it started off by him helping me, whereas a lot of relationships are a struggle because it feels really one-sided.
Yeah.
And that there's things they only want me because of something I can do for them, mm-hmm. or give them. And for him, you know, he's been a friend because there's give and take.
That's awesome.
And so he's somebody that's been encouraging to me. Mm-hmm. We have another friend too that, she's probably our best friend, and she's taught us a lot about the culture. And she's somebody that Jen met on a plane flying back from Cat Lake. And she just started talking to Jen. And I don't know how you got her number or Facebook.
Jen, the introvert.
Facebook friend.
Yeah. Getting people's numbers on an airplane. Yep.
Getting me out of my comfort zone.
I just try and avoid eye contact on airplanes.
Yeah. I mean, everybody does up there. So.
So she kind of made this.
She's
friend
kind of an out of the box.
She's a little bit different.
Native lady, and, so.
But she's been tremendously helpful to us, and just in teaching us a lot about history and culture and language and stories and how the local government works and how the local government interfaces with the national government and all these things that we would have no way of learning. Mm-hmm. She's been a really good teacher for us and a good friend. And
but even with her, it took us 2 years before she invited us into her house. You know, it took 2 years of us standing on her porch, bringing her fish and whatever.
Yeah, she would, or Jen making
or,
a dessert.
Or she'd come to our house, fine. But, like,
yeah.
It took 2 years for us to be invited into her house.
Yeah.
So. But, yeah, and now we've been invited in several times now. But so those have been a couple of really good relationships that we have that have been a blessing. Mm. And we have a few more. We have more, too, with people up north. We just don't get to see them as often.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But we've had people that have taken us out to their family trap line where they've been going for generations and take us like moose hunting or fishing. And and they're excited. You know, they're excited to show us their land and their some of their cultural practices, teaching Jen how to cut up moose meat or how to pluck a a duck or
shooting.
Go partridge hunting.
Partridge hunting with slingshots.
Yeah, partridge are, we call them.
I'm terrible at.
Like rough grouse, we call them. They're really grouse, but they hunt with slingshots, and they're like, but they've been doing it since they can pull a slingshot back.
Right.
And they'll go out with a slingshot and kill like 10 of them.
Hit them right in the head. I'm like, I can't even.
And they just pick.
It hit in the area that it's in.
Yeah, they pick up rocks, like a handful of rocks off the ground. I mean, they're not using like fancy, like stainless steel
balls
or marbles or anything. It's just like you kind of get an idea of which rocks are the best size and the right size. And but Jen gets invited into more of that kind of stuff just because they're way quicker to invite her in than me, which is hard sometimes. I see the stuff they're doing, and I'm like, man, I'd like to do that with them. But it's like, they just don't see me that way.
But also, like, they've taught me how to do a lot of like the beadwork and how to make moccasins and earrings and all different kinds of things. And that's been really fun because it's also something like I really enjoy doing. So it's a great relationship building activity it feels like life-giving. It brings me joy.
That's awesome.
So
and Jen's got, you have learned how to do like the, not just painting, but the earrings. You kind of learned how to make, a lady taught her how to make earrings and stuff out of birch. I mean, she's learned a lot of things.
If you haven't seen Jen's artwork, you need to check it out. Jen, talk a little bit about that whole thing of like painting and artwork. And I mean, I know COVID and lockdowns kind of led you to it, but.
So, I mean, for me, 17 years, I did interior painting and exterior painting and drywall finishing and all that. So like I was familiar, you know, with that realm of painting, but I've never done like, you know, like small paintings, you know? And so like during COVID, we're just kind of stuck in our house. And so I just kind of started exploring that, and it was something I found that I was fairly good at and enjoyed doing and, continued to do. It's actually been a really, great opportunity for me to, do paintings and different things for some of the elders. I've done stuff in Cat Lake and Muskrat Dam and Round Lake. And so, yeah, it's just a really great way to connect with some of the people there, too. I literally had a time in one of the communities where I had a person that didn't speak to me the whole time I was there. And then after I gave them one of these gifts, like it was just like all of the walls were down and they just like poured out their heart with me and I was able to pray with them. And you know what I mean? So it was just,
and that was a,
and this was of another believer.
Yeah. Wow. And so, not just a believer, but like a leader in the church, you know? And so there's still those walls are there.
Yeah. So it was just, I don't know. It's just something about giving gifts is just like huge in their culture. And so,
we kind of learned in that one, we should give those gifts on the front end of the trip. But the thing is, like, that was our first time.
Right.
Like,
there.
Like, well, we had been through there before and we had stopped and visited, like, one family that we knew a few times. But this was the first time that we were actually spending time there. And we didn't know, like, we don't want to just go randomly give gifts to people that we don't know. And so like it was kind of like building a relationship throughout the week so that we could see, oh, who would I like to give something to? And then that kind of, but then that kind of opens the door for those relationships in the future. But
I mean, I think another reason why like the painting was so appealing to me was just that in ministry, a lot of times it's, you never see the fruit of what you're doing. Sure. You don't get to see that finished product. And so like with the painting, it was like a very tangible, like, you know, I'm starting with this blank canvas and now it's just this beautiful piece of art, you know? Yeah. And so, and it's done and it's complete and now I can give it to somebody and it like makes them happy, makes me happy, you know? So like, I feel like that was like, in a way, a little piece of something I feel like is missing sometimes from our actual life, you know? And so, yeah, for me, that is one thing that was a really good thing.
Yeah. Well, we talked, I mean, a little bit earlier about that whole thing of like, so what were some of your things you anticipated going into ministry? Mm. And so often, because you have to start with a foundation, there's a lot of like theological work. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of like, how do I rightly handle God's word? How, you know, how do I study God's word? How do I present God's word to somebody? Mm-hmm. But ministry is very rarely just a sermon, you know, where, okay, it's like the painting. I'm preparing for it. I'm painting it. And here's the finished product. I thought this was important to point out maybe to people who are listening. Most of the ministry you guys have described is relationships.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And building those relationships, building trust, building those avenues for gospel conversations. Mm-hmm. And the good news about that is that's something that people listening to this, again, who go, I'm probably never going to be a missionary, they can do right now. Mm-hmm. Like they can be building relationships right now. You're a local missionary. Build those relationships where God has you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, before I get into that, I'd like to, like, one of the things, like, I had a neighbor that did that really good for us growing up, and he was really good at loving his neighbor.
Yeah.
And, like, he even had a backhoe that he, like, everything that he did, everything he had, he used to love his neighbor, whether it be his tractor or his backhoe. I mean, he would come over and help remodel my parents' basement, help build our barn. He would dig stuff, big holes for us when we needed, because he had a machine. And he did that for everybody, though, not just my family. And that was his way of I think, you know, building, not just building trust, but it gives you, like, you need a reason sometimes to be involved in somebody's life, you know what I mean? Like, you can't just, like, especially now people are so busy, and like giving of yourself to help somebody, like do all those projects and things. Like, he was on the police force for maybe 20-25 years, and when he moved up there, he was retired, but he's basically been retired like as long as I could have known him, which is, I think he moved up there when I was 10 and now I'm 46. And so, but he's always worked and been busy at stuff. And so he did a really good job, I think, modeling that for me, you know, just how to make some of those inroads into people's lives. But I know I lost the question now, but it was like, what did we expect going up there versus... What was the question?
Yeah, I mean, there's just expectations that go in. Maybe a better question is, with all those expectations, what are some of the roadblocks that you guys have hit that either you saw coming or you didn't see coming, like obstacles to ministry?
Well, one of the things that we learned in our training, and this was like, I mean, it's one quote that I always remember, is unrealistic expectations are premeditated resentments. Except,
dang, that's good.
And it is good, but the problem is it's very difficult for you to not have unrealistic expectations, because if you're doing something you've never done, you have no idea what to expect. Like, we never moved to a different country or lived in another culture or had to try to learn another language. And so going through our training, we got a glimpse of that, but then we moved to a completely different place.
Sure.
You know, you're basically moving from Mexico to Canada, and those are vastly different. But and so I think one of the things I struggled with big time, and I probably still do to some degree, is that when COVID hit, it just shut everything down for like a year and a half. I mean, it was a long time.
At least.
It was a long time.
Especially up there.
Yeah.
Maybe 2 years. And it's,
and then
like,
the community.
And so part of that is,
yeah.
And I've mentioned this before at church, but there's like some it's easy to have some, again, like you said, unrealistic expectations are premeditated resentments, but some of that resentment, I probably struggled to not have some resentment toward God in a way, because it's like, I've been planning on doing this for a long time, yeah. you know, and now to, you make all these plans and you try to set up everything as well as you can, and you end up moving to a new country like 3 months ahead of like this life altering global pandemic. And it's like, right. man, like how did that have to be our story? Yeah. You yeah. know, like, it's already hard enough as it is. And, you know, trying to fight through like the fact that God knows all that's going to mm-hmm. happen before right. you do it. Right. And there's been other things. I mean, along the way, I mean, 2 weeks, and I'm not going to get into this story big time, but 2 weeks into our training, we found out like the president of the ministry was no longer with the ministry. And it yeah. was like, wait, I just sold all my stuff and moved away from my family and quit the job I had worked for a really long time. And, yeah. and so there's been a lot of things that we didn't expect that just kind of knock the wind out of you a little bit. And so you got to try to fight through those. I think, I mean, obviously praying through those things, but also being able to kind of talk through that with your missionary teammates. Mm-hmm. And we're fortunate to have mm-hmm. three families that had lived in Canada for years by the time we got there. And so, and they're all going through it with you.
Sure.
You know, they're in the trenches with you, and mm-hmm. and everybody's kind of they're experiencing that to some degree. And so being able to mm-hmm. talk through that together and pray through that together and talk each other off the ledge, so to speak, you know, yeah. some days you just have really bad days or you're really having a really hard time, and you can just like reach out to them, call mm-hmm. them, and they can pray for you and kind of share the gospel with you and share scripture with you. And then other days you're doing that, you know, mm-hmm. you're doing that with them and trying to encourage them. And, mm-hmm. and so that's what makes it really good to have a team.
Yeah.
Because like, you know, the Ecclesiastes, you know, if a person falls and there's no one to pick them up, you know, kind of like woe to that man. But if two or three go together,
yeah,
you know, you got somebody to help pick you up when you,
yeah,
when you fall down. And so
it's a great verse. Like, we often hear that at weddings, you know, but a cord of three strands is not easily broken. Mm-hmm. And then we usually go, oh, see how much they love each other. Like, aren't you glad they have each other mm-hmm. now? And that's not the point of that. The point is, yes, you have each other and you desperately need other people mm-hmm. like that. That's the whole point of that. Like, we need mm-hmm. other believers in our life to hold us up when we are down. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that, especially that's true for you guys as you stand in this remote place mm-hmm. and go like, yeah, we can't stand there alone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's a rough place to be.
They need us too. Like, you know, as yeah. much as you don't want to be like proudful about that, but like, we have things that, you know, we can offer other people too, just to be that encouragement and stuff. You know, we need to like burden each other.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
we've grown really close with our pastor up there and mm-hmm. his wife. They're like probably with our teammates, Tondina Simpson and Muskrat, like those are our closest. I mean, it's oftentimes people that are still close to you in age. We're mm-hmm. all pretty close in age, but, and in life and life experience.
Sure.
But they've been a tremendous help to us when we are going through difficult ministry things or mm-hmm. people that we care about are going through difficult things, and it's just like a really bad day.
Yeah.
And you just need somebody to kind of, I don't know.
Hold up your arms.
Yeah.
Yeah, just hold up your arms, or just to kind of verbally process like, this is...
Yeah.
You know, this really stinks, you know, yeah. whatever. And yeah. and yeah, somebody to, it's good when, yeah, you have people to.
Or you'll get a call from like Jonas or somebody.
Yeah.
Like when you're having a bad week or
yeah.
month or no, I'm just kidding.
Year.
No, year.
But it's great to have people to like this, like Jesus said, you know, weep with those who weep and rejoice with those who rejoice, and, you know, community.
Yeah.
Your community is important. And so those are the people that help get you through some of those difficult things that you maybe didn't expect to go through.
Sure.
And I think going there, you know, we knew like it was going to be hard. And we knew that it was going to be dark and there's going to be things that were discouraging, but it was more of all those things than what we expected. I think especially with COVID and, and now you're not getting to do like, cause we were one of the first groups of missionaries sent out from Tevri tribe where we actually had like a job description.
Okay.
Where it's like, here's the different needs on the different fields. And then do any of these, are these things that kind of fit your skill set and your, maybe your job experience or whatnot. And so going up there, we had worked a couple of times at, well, here and at another church doing youth ministry, and we had raised our children. And so now we're going to go work with all these high school students. And then what, 3 or 4 months in, the school shut down until the spring of this year.
Good grief.
So like they didn't have school for 2 years, and then in 2023 they basically, or 22 and 23, they just didn't allow any outside visitors. And so they're our whole, now that they actually made a plan, right, for here's how you're going to go, here's what you're going to do, here's where you're going to do it, we couldn't do any of it. And so then it starts, there starts to be this struggle in my mind between, well, there's kind of the struggle between kind of the things that you're enduring and the fruit that you're seeing.
Yeah.
And I always tell people, I feel like if those two things are being equal, then you're like, yeah, this is totally worth it. But if it feels like there's just a lot of frustration and difficulty and hardship, and there's not a whole lot of open doors, there's not a whole lot of fruit of your ministry, then it's like, well, why am I doing this?
Yeah.
You know? And I think, so that's kind of a, I think what you call an existential crisis, you know, to where it's like your expectation was you're going to do this certain job, and that you're going to, hopefully if you do that faithfully enough, long enough, that it's going to have an impact, and that maybe you'll see people come to Christ, and they'll become a new creation in Christ, and they'll start living a Christian life, and you're walking with them doing that. But when you don't see that, it starts to be like, you know, you start weighing those things out, and you're like, is it worth it? You know? And and so that's, I guess, some of the things, you know, when your expectations don't line up with your reality, you have to, you start asking yourself some of those hard questions.
Yeah. Which is one of the important things. And I just keep thinking there's so many parallels between you and us listening to it. We all have times where we go in with a certain expectation, and then we get there and we go, this isn't it.
Yeah.
This isn't what I wanted. This isn't what I signed up for. God, I'm struggling to hold on to this idea that you're good, and yet you put me in this. And I just love that idea of those unreal expectations. It's premeditating. It's setting the stage for us to have bitterness. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And bitterness at people, bitterness at God, and how quickly, when we find ourselves there, we have to stop and reorient, get our expectations right. Like, that's not a blank check for us to like check out, like, man, not what I expected. I don't want to get bitter. I'm leaving right now.
Yeah.
No, I have to adjust my expectations, you know, go back before the Lord. Okay, God, help me see this really, really clearly.
Yep.
Yeah.
And maybe get those things down on paper. Like, here's what we expect. Here's what it looks like for us now.
Mm-hmm.
And man, I'm thinking of a couple situations that I know are going on in people's lives, and just thinking that's what they're doing on a daily basis. And it's the same thing that you guys are doing in Canada.
I feel like there was a point, I don't even know exactly when it was, but I know, like, I was very discouraged. I did not want to be there. I didn't want to be in Canada at all. And the pastor's wife, I met with her the one day, and we just sat down and cried together and prayed together, and it was wonderful. And then I started going through this study of Joshua in the Bible, and God just, like, I feel like he just spoke to me through, you know, his word and stuff, and just realizing how important it is for us to remember who God is.
Yeah.
And if I have to make a pile of rocks in the corner of my house to remember what he's done in our life and why we're here, and then we need to do that. And I just, through that study, I just, God just really did a work in my heart through that, you know, and it's me.
Yeah.
It's not him. So
it just makes me think of the words of that old hymn. Here I raise my Ebenezer.
Yes.
My
yes.
pile of rocks.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. You know.
And then we go, here's why I did this, because here where I am right now,
mm-hmm.
by your great help, I've come. Mm-hmm. Like, the only reason mm-hmm. I've come this far is your great help.
Yeah.
I need a big pile of rocks in the corner to remind myself.
Because we can take that little quarter and put it right here, and it can completely block out the sun, like Harold tells that story.
Yeah.
I'll never forget that story, because, you know, we have to make sure we have everything in perspective.
Yeah.
You know, we have a big God who can solve these big problems, you know, but in our own little eyes, it seems very big and very hopeless. So.
Well, and I think in that, too, we're just like, I mean, we're just like Israel, in that, like, every time they went to battle another enemy, it's like they forget that God was the one who won that battle for them before.
Yeah.
Now it's like they're going to do it in their own strength, and it's like, nope, you're not. You're gonna.
Mm-hmm. Aren't you glad we don't do that? We just remember every time.
Yeah.
That'd be nice.
That's why my house is full of rocks. Literally. Not even lying.
Well, that, and you guys do live not close to, but around an amethyst mine.
Yeah.
And
yes.
That's kind of awesome.
Yes.
If I lived there, my house, thanks to my wife, would be made of rocks.
Of rocks. I think. I mean, yeah.
I mean, that's what been one of the great things about up there, is just the natural beauty.
Oh, yeah.
That, I mean, whether it be like the amethyst mine, or just being able to go.
Or the Northern Lights.
Or get away, just be able to go jump in the boat and get away from everybody. And sometimes you need to do that, because it's just like they're knocking on your door.
Yeah.
And you just can't.
Yeah.
Not all the time can you feel like you can deal with it, you know, or you feel up for it, or. But yeah, you find out pretty quick, like, all that stuff's really great, but that's still not enough. Like, that's not a reason to be there.
Yeah.
Like, you can pretty quickly get overwhelmed by all the other stuff. So, I mean, you got to put your trust in the Lord and mm-hmm. find your life in Him. And so.
Well, especially in a culture that's pervasively dark mm-hmm. and depressing and discouraging, and mm-hmm. and there's a lot of hopelessness surrounding you. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a lot of components, like broken and non-existent marriages mm-hmm. in First Nations people, fatherlessness,
mm-hmm. yep.
Drug and alcohol addiction, mm-hmm. as that's the primary way that we're going to handle our problems is alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
And then trying, from your perspective, to bridge those gaps mm-hmm. into those cultures and communities,
mm-hmm.
you know, and even just dealing with your ethnicity that you're bringing to the table.
Mm-hmm.
Like, those are all difficulties. And mm-hmm. yet we can't live or die, find our joy or hope or fulfillment mm-hmm. in just those things. It has to be, I'm finding them mm-hmm. in the Lord. So maybe a good, pulling ourselves back out of the pit a little bit here.
Mm-hmm.
What are some of the greatest joys that God has given you there? Things that you look back over the last couple of years and you're like, man, that was so important.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I have a very recent one even. When my dad was really sick, my mom and dad had come to visit us in Canada, and dad got really sick just a couple days in, and had septic shock, and we have no ICU in our little town. And so he had to be flown to a bigger town with an ICU, better care. And he was there for a couple weeks there. And so that all of that was very difficult. But while we were there in Thunder Bay, I had one of our dear friends that we went and built a shed for. Her sister was there, you know, having cancer treatment and stuff. And she's a believer in the Lord. And I ran into her one day while we were having, me and my mom were having lunch in the cafeteria. And it was just as if God had, like, put us both there intentionally on purpose, you know, like her for me and me for her, you know. And on my birthday, the one day when we were spending the day in the hospital, she wanted me to come in her room, and she had a gift for me. And it, you know, I know she doesn't have much, you know, and she gave me a lot, and it meant so much. And then she shared her testimony with me. And so, like, it was just, it meant so much because, like, yeah, it is, it's dark and it feels hopeless. And, but yet she's one that has, like, come out on the other side, yeah. You know, and she has a story to tell. And, so that was, like, really encouraging to me. Just that, you know, there is hope, you know, and, you know, and she is proof of that. And so, yeah, I was just super thankful because I needed her in during that, those couple weeks, you know, and she was there. I know she was there praying for me and sending me messages and just encouraging me. And yeah, so I was just, yeah, it was just a sweet little gift from God, you know? So
I think for me, one thing has been, probably while, especially while COVID was going on, it was, we end up spending more time pouring into the local church than we anticipated. Mm. So that wasn't something that we expected, but it was something that kind of happened out of, like, well, we can't do this other thing. Let's do what we can.
Yeah.
And so there was a point where there was a guy who had been in the youth ministry, and he would preach with the pastor. They would kind of do it together. And then there was an elder that would preach every once in a while. But eventually, him and another guy were sent to be missionaries in Quebec. And so now, and the guy, the one of the elders, his wife got brain cancer. So now the pastor was kind of preaching on his own. And he had just come off a sabbatical the summer previous. This would have been like in the spring of the year. And he's like, I'm already kind of, you know, running on fumes here because you know, I've just been doing this a lot by myself. And it's like, have you ever done any preaching? And on, he said, in your missionary travels or at your church? And I was like, yeah. And he's like, would you be interested in doing that? And I was like, yeah, I've been kind of feeling like I should be doing that, but I'm not. And he's like, well, would you be interested in doing that? So I said yeah, and then I think for maybe a couple months it was at least 6 weeks, it was every other week or maybe 2 months, just kind of jumped in to help out. And we started, I think, at First Peter, and then we kind of talked about, I kind of talked about this practice that I saw when we were Papua New Guinea, how they were training up all these young preachers, and every Sunday they would critique the sermon after the service. And I thought, man, maybe that would be good to do. Maybe we could start doing that. And so we talked about it for a while, and we started getting together. And then eventually we got to where we would kind of, we found these, I don't know what church it was from, some worksheet that just asked these questions, and we kind of graded each other. And so we kind of formed a preaching team, and we started doing that. Like every Tuesday we get together. And then eventually we pulled my teammate into it. And then as the elder that would preach, sometimes his wife started showing improvements with her brain cancer. It actually went into remission. And so he started coming, and then we got an interim youth pastor came on, and we started pulling him in there. So now we have a 5-person preaching team. And we've been doing that for a couple years now, where we critique our sermons. And
yeah, it's awesome.
We changed the, it went from, I think, more preaching topically to expositionally. The church has made that shift. And so we preach through books of the Bible. Right now we're in John. And we just go in and we kind of like go through and kind of read and kind of lay out like, okay, I think this is, here's a sermon. Who's going to take this one? Who's going to take that one? And hoping to take them to Simeon Trust this year. Yeah. Last year it was just my teammate and I that went, but I'm hoping to take some of the guys from there. But it's been great to see.
And Simeon Trust is the same thing that our preaching team has been going through.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And it's been great to see everybody grow in their preaching. And all of us have grown in our preaching.
Yeah.
And so.
Well, and there was something Jen said, and I'm trying to remember exactly what it was before we started, where you were talking about some advice in thinking about joys that they had given you.
Yeah, so actually just at our field conference this last August, one of the things that Steve Lesson had said in our group time was that our joy needs to be in a relationship and not in the outcome of our ministry or whatever. Yeah. But so we need to be careful that, our joy isn't connected to our ministry outcome, but that it's in Jesus, our relationship with Jesus and our identity in Christ, what Harold was even talking about on Sunday. So
how vital is that?
Yeah.
It's vital if you have left home and family and are like serving in Northern Ontario in a different culture. That's vital if you're living close to home and family. And you have all of those unreal expectations. And when disappointment comes, you're just blown out of the water. Mm-hmm. Like, we can't find our hope and our joy, our attachment for whatever the future holds, whatever God's sovereign plan holds for us, we can't attach our joy or sorrow to that based on the outcome that we want to see. Mm-hmm. It has to be tied underneath that. This is the bedrock foundation of my life and faith. It is who I am in Christ, who He has made me. What he has done and accomplished in me, what he's doing through me, even if I don't get to see it in my lifetime. And I mean, that's one of the things I know we've talked about with the ministry you guys are currently serving in. There's a chance that you guys and what you're serving in doesn't even make a dent in that culture for 40 years, like long ways out. So it's a good reminder for us who care about you, who love you, who are praying for you, who are supporting you. Number one, to do all those things because you're in a tough spot, but also to learn from that, to model that in our own life and go, all right, so I may never in this life see the fruit of what I'm working on, but I'm still called to be a local missionary. When I go to school tomorrow, I'm a local missionary. When I go to work tomorrow, I'm a local missionary. Like how I engage with my neighbors. We just finished community groups reading Joining Jesus on His Mission on, reaching out to neighbors. And that is the Great Commission, like that we would take the good news. And yet we can't tie our identity to how people receive that good news or reject it.
Right.
We're just called to be faithful.
Yeah.
So thank you to you guys for being faithful. I know you got to go. You got some place you got to be here pretty soon. We appreciate your faithfulness in serving in this season. I mean, God works with us in season. So that doesn't mean you have to live in Ontario forever. But also, like, this today's a great example of not feeling good and still being faithful. Just appreciate you guys a lot. So. Yeah. We'll continue praying for you. Just encourage those who are listening, continue financially supporting them, spiritually supporting them through prayer, emotionally supporting them by reaching out to them. I know they need it, and we're all in the ministry of the gospel together. So,
yeah.
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 Thank you.
All right.
Yeah,
thanks guys.
See
Appreciate you. All right. Bye-bye.